In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain!
Way to go, Stan. I love that shot.
Well, we sent that beagle down under the ocean.
I'm John Krolinski.
I am Stan Hudson, and you are. And this is
Sink the Beagle, where we laugh at each other, take a lighthearted look at the serious issues of evolution and creation. Lighthearted because there's no funner way to do it. Funner
That's
is
right.
a word.
And we love to send down the beagle down under. And today we're talking down under.
Down under, mate.
Down under in a special version of
Sink the Beagle.
Sink the Beagle Australian yes. today. We're going down under to look at evidence of the flood.
Flood down under.
In the smallest of continents, but the biggest of islands, Australia.
Yes, and that is an exciting study. And once we look at some evidences, we hope that you will understand that it is an unusual place, yet it still shows evidence, like the rest of the world, of many of the same properties we find throughout the world that give a good deal of credibility to a worldwide flood.
Well, wherever we're looking for evidence of the flood in the geologic column, we're expecting something like this. If the flood happened, there should be billions of dead things buried in rock layers laid down by water all over the earth. At least that's what Ken Ham, the Australian head of Answers in Genesis, say.
And some of his cohorts.
And he would know if it's true in Australia, are there billions of dead things buried in rock layers?
Well, yes. In fact, there are,
okay,
even in Australia.
And that's the end of today's program.
No, not quite. Actually, we want to describe some of them because actually, you know, though Australia has billions of dead things, they may not have the most impressive ones. You know, it's like kind of like when it came time to for continents to choose up their dinosaurs, like you can see North America with Canada, the United States,
yes.
saying, we got the first two draft picks.
Yep.
I'll take T-Rex.
T-Rex. Okay.
Canada, you're next. What do you want?
We'll take Apatosaurus.
Yeah, whoa. And by the time they got to the now on the clock, Australia, pick number 30, what's left? How about a Pliosaur?
Okay.
We'll take it.
We'll take a Pliosaur.
What's a Pliosaur, Stan?
Pliosaur is sort of a subcompact version of the Plesiosaur.
What is that?
Okay. It's a swimming reptile. It's sort of a big lizard with webbed feet.
A big lizard with webbed
feet.
But this one's not as big as some of the Plesiosaurs are bigger, but the Pliosaurs are kind of a version that's not quite as big.
Subcompact.
Yeah. It's not like buying a Volkswagen instead of a huge Dodge Ram pickup truck for, you know, four-door, you know, whatever.
Now, near Richmond, Queensland, they found a particularly good example of a Pliosaur. And it is entombed in sediment there, buried.
It drowned.
Billions of beds. Yeah,
it got drowned in a big event and got buried.
Here's a swimming thing that drowned. That's interesting.
When you get a lot of dirt up your nose, it's hard to even breathe then, too.
when an animal dies in a natural environment, in the water, its remains are quickly scavenged. You know, other things munch on them. Here's a great big sandwich here, this Pliosaur, and there's nothing left. The bones fall apart, and that's it. But not in the case of billions of dead things buried in sediment all over the earth.
Yep. You find a case of the Pliosaur being buried, and he is not only buried, he is preserved. Excellent. Just a few little bones on the fingertips, or the flipper tips, we'd probably want to say, were missing, and the rest of the fossils in wonderful condition.
Yes.
And they were really excited about the condition of this fossil. And it's a gorgeous fossil. If you've ever seen a picture of it or ever been down there in the Richmond area of Queensland and seen it, the exact one. That's one of the things that seemed to show that there was that big washout called the flood worldwide, even on the small continent of Australia.
Australia. Well, how about other evidences? Do we have other evidences down under of the
worldwide flood? I think there's a few. How about the one called Fast Opals?
Fast Opals. Now, okay, let me
speak
on this.
There used to be a car called the Opal, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was a German car, I think. And it wasn't fast.
It wasn't much of one either.
There
wasn't. This can't be that we're talking about here.
It's something else. We're talking about a rock, and you know I am a rock hound. I love minerals. I have a collection I've got, actually. I've got some precious opal. In fact, a piece of black opal from Australia. Australia is world renowned for the black opals that come from its opal mines there. Yeah. Well, we've all been told by the long-agers, the uniformitarian gradualists of the world, that say that opals come from millions of years of formation. Now, they're made out of water.
So you have some opals that are millions of years old, right?
Well, probably not, but somebody's even kind of picked up the pace a little bit here.
You mean age isn't the predominant factor for making opals?
Apparently not, because there is a miner in Australia right now who can produce, just in a bottle, using some of the same minerals that are found there in opal mine areas, put a little water in the form of an electrolyte solution in there, and set it on a shelf and wait. And within just a few days, there begins to appear opal. Yeah, they're starting to form, complete with the beautiful colors, the rainbow colors captured.
Wonderful.
That's
that
it.
Quick. Wow. A few weeks, huh? That's not even a blink of an eye in evolutionary time.
That's exactly right. They don't take millions of years to form. They take millions of seconds.
That farmer must be doing real well if he can make opals in millions of seconds.
Yeah, how large would you like that one, mate? You know, while you wait.
Opals while you wait. Kind of like, I'll go to the drive-thru and we'll pick up a few.
Yeah.
Well, that's another reason that we seem to be able to know that it was not millions of years, but the suitable conditions provided by a global flood would also produce these beautiful opals.
Exactly.
And
lots
so they're thinking that might happen. Lots of water.
Lots of water.
You know, there's other reasons, you know, Stan, why the people of Australia were privy and had inside track on the flood.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to talk about this one, even though you're pointing at another one.
Oh.
I want to talk about this one.
Which one?
And this is the vertical fossilized logs that have been entombed in sediments. In other words, kind of fossilized forest. You know, these big logs are called polystrate. Fossils, which
they
means
penetrate several layers of strata.
Yes.
Polystrate,
and
many
some of them,
stratas.
That's exactly
Thank
right.
Thank you.
That's very good. Come to the head of the class.
Thank you.
You get to speak in a minute. Okay, now, the log is sometimes set standing up, you know, and you thought, oh, maybe
Did
they're...
Did it grow in that way?
No, because there's no roots at the bottom. And the point is this, when they have these logs, sometimes they look like this is a formation of 50 million years ago, but the log is penetrating one that, you know, 50, there's 75, there's 100 million years, and it can't be that. Plus, on top of that, they do carbon dating of some of these logs and find out that they're quite young indeed, at least compared to the millions of years dates of the sediments. And so, the millions of years sediments, probably the date is wrong.
We got a problem here, Houston. We got a problem with our dating methods.
Yes.
We're back not to billions and billions of years, not even millions and millions. We got a shorter age.
The sandstone that it was found in, which was near Sydney, was supposedly dated at 200 million years, but the carbon-14 dating had it at just a few thousand years, the log.
Oops.
Oops.
We got some problems.
Okay.
Well, we have
you
other reasons,
now.
Though, too, why we think that the flood took place worldwide and affected our friends down under.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the underfit valleys. That's just what everybody needs to run into someday is an underfit valley. They get an attitude, I think.
I've heard of the Valley of the Shadow of Death, but the underfit valley is one I think I regularly pass through.
Well, actually, underfit valley are these huge valleys with giant cliffs, and they got a spit or a trickle of water of a river flowing through them.
Well, now, that kind of sounds like the Grand Canyon, but that's another program, probably.
Well, yeah, but actually it fits the Grand Canyon.
It's the same thing, isn't it?
In other words, valleys where the river that's found in this valley contains so little water, they never could have cut that valley. You can never picture in any scenario little river under any kind of calendar.
Not even with millions and millions of years?
Not even with millions and millions of years.
So a creek ain't going to do it when it's a big valley.
Nope, not going to do it. Okay. It would require the huge volume of floodwaters receding off the land toward maybe the end of Noah's flood or whatever to cut these valleys to maybe a little softer sediment, though that's not totally required. We know that fast-moving water can cut through some pretty hard rock, too.
Hard rock, but probably it was softer sediment after the flood. Okay.
A little river took up residence, just like the birds take up residence in a big barn.
Well, I want to talk about coal now. Now, coal is an area in which we have long thought long age, because coal, as we all know, forms at the bottom of peat bogs, and peat bogs take a long time. That's everything takes a long time. That's what's kind of the thing about geology today. Everything takes so long.
Including their thinking around to write science.
Well,
take a long time, too.
Well, now
some of them.
Here's the thing about the coal in Australia. If you were going down to Victoria, and you were taking a look around there at some of the coal deposits, you would be amazed because some are huge, up to 300 feet thick, some of the coal.
That's a lot of bog to have to be compressed.
That's a lot
and covered with seawater and dirt and the right sediments to turn this into coal.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, actually, we're pretty sure now that coal is not formed by peat bogs. Well, maybe one of the ways of doing it, but the better and more logical way is through floating log mats.
Mats, huge ones.
Huge floating barges,
kind of
so to speak.
Kind of what happened at Spirit Lake after Mount St. Helens.
Exactly. Oh, good memory. That's very good. Now, if there are huge mats of forest-sized bunches of trees floating in the water, how do you get something like that? It would kind of require a flood.
A massive catastrophic event.
Okay.
And they also found, by the way, in these coal fields, we knew that it contains the huge logs sitting in all orientations, coalified.
Yes.
So it shows that they weren't growing in a situation. They weren't on a mountain.
Yes.
These were transported.
Yeah,
these were
logs.
Imported, transported, all kinds of different forests that aren't even accustomed to that area found their way there, were buried down under.
Okay. Now, probably the item that people think about in the geology of Australia is Ayers Rock.
Hey, mate, yeah. You've been there?
Well, I'm longing to go. I'm waiting for somebody to ask, dear Drs. Hudson and Kerlinski, we want to have you come to Australia to do a Sink the Beagle.
And part of our...
Please come.
And we'll take you to Ayers Rock.
And yeah, we're there. How much do we have to pay to go? That's the only thing I want to know. But
no.
Anyway, there's this huge, huge sandstone monolith in the center of Central Australia, and for years they thought this is a rock kind of floating in the sand, but actually they found out it's the upturned end of a sandstone bed. It's actually a deposit that's kind of sticking the end of it out into the air.
Yeah, it's a big long curled deposit, actually, if you look at the geology of it. An amazing
sandstone,
an amazing formation.
Mm-hmm.
Another evidence of a big flood.
Big flood, because big flood. It is sandstone. And how do you make sandstone? You need lots of water.
There's one other thing that Australia has that almost everywhere else in the world has as well, Stan. It is flood stories.
Flood stories,
the
indeed.
The Aboriginal people of Australia provide a level of a flood story that has, in some respects, similarity to the one described in the Bible, Noah's flood.
Well, so Australia is no different than the rest of the world in that sense, because every continent has stories, mass stories, different tribes having their own stories for some kind of past deluge in which the world was more or less wiped out, save for just a few survivors.
Theirs go like this. A god became angry, the flood covered the high mountains, and all the people and animals were drowned except those people and animals who were saved on a canoe or a raft, and a bird clicked a leaf in its mouth.
Okay.
And that's basically their flood story, but it's a short one, brief one.
Mm-hmm.
We have a better flood story, though, that I think it was taken from. It's one of our torpedo texts found in 2 Peter 3. What do you have there, Stan?
It says, "For this they willfully forget that by the word of the Lord the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of water and in the water, by which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water." The world perish,
including down under.
I think Australia is part of the world last time I checked my National Geographic Atlas.
And that's what we like to share with you. All the things from all over the world. You went on a little our global tour of Sink the Beagle today.
A lot cheaper.
Flying there. I mean, it was a whole lot less expensive. Good. We hope you'll join us again next time as we investigate more fun-filled things in our world on Sink the Beagle.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. We'd like to send you a special gift just for being with us today. Write to our email address, beagle@lifetalk.net, and ask for your free copy of Dr. Dwight Nelson's book called Built to Last, A Thoughtful Look at Creation and Evolution. Ask for Built to Last when you write to beagle@lifetalk.net. And be sure to listen in next time for Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile from 7 Standard.